light of a pandemic and the Great Recession, many business leaders are now finding themselves navigating the waters that are employees working remotely. And if that's you, well, please welcome our guest for today, Mr. Jordan Schumacher, founder of Thought Leader, as he shares his secrets to growing a team remotely and successfully growing a business with a remote team. And with that, I will turn it over to our hosts, Josh Melton and Chad Brown.
What is up, entrepreneurs? Welcome back to the Stronger Business Podcast. We're here in the studio today recording with a new friend of mine, future client, a lot of connections here on the back end of some other guests that's been on our podcast. Jordan, welcome to the podcast, man.
Thanks, Chad. Happy to be here.
Hey, I got a question for you right off the start.
Oh, my
Jordan,
God.
Like, is this legit? Like, Chad's like slinging out like future client. Like, I don't know if you guys have even talked about that at all, or if he's just kind of putting that, like, I'm going to speak it out into the universe. I got this external pressure now. Now Jordan's got to be a client by the time this episode releases, or like there's some conflict here.
There is now 110 people that know he's supposed to be a client. So he feels like obligated.
I respect that as a sales tactic. To be honest, I thought that I already was an official client. So maybe I'm the one who's playing catch up here.
Well, I'm a numbers guy, Jordan. So until that invoice is paid, you're like a future client. I don't go by work performed. I go by money.
That's fair.
I'm more on the cash basis side of the client.
That's fair.
Onboarding process.
Chad's like, you're a client. You're a client of Chad's once that first check is cleared. Which we got some money in the bank. That's how stronger businesses are created, man.
All right. So before we dive in to the awesome side of what you're going to talk about and teach us today, Jordan, I got a question for you. A few weeks ago, we had a Zoom back to you being a potential client. You know, we'll see how it goes from here. See how this episode goes. We Zoomed and I thought Jordan, one time he was, I think, in New York. One time he was in Arizona, maybe. This time he's on a balcony somewhere. I'm like, man, where are you at? Like, what's going on? You were somewhere in the Caribbean and said, hey, I'm down here. I'm thinking about moving. I'm checking out the laws and the tax breaks. And we may be all the way down here. We may be buying a place and moving. So what? Fill me in on that, my man, if that's something that
yes.
Share.
Yes, 100%. So we were in USVI. My wife and I were looking at potentially moving there. She's going back to grad school for marine biology, and they've got a really great program. And USVI, US Virgin Islands, beautiful. Would highly recommend anyone who goes there. It's just a beautiful spot. We ultimately decided it's not a fit for us to move there. And a big part of that, actually, surprise announcement, my wife's pregnant. We just found out. And so a big part of that is that's why we're not moving there. So
yeah, this is a banner year for you, man. You're expecting a kid. You're a new client at Chad's. I mean, what else could go right for you, man?
I mean, I don't think it gets better than those two things.
This is amazing. Congrats, man.
Thank you.
That's awesome. You see all that pretty background you got going on there? All that's going to be destroyed in about a year. Kids climbing in the background and stuff.
You have bubble wrap over that whole shelving thing behind
you. Well, I'm excited for you and I'm excited for our audience today because obviously you figured out enough on the entrepreneur and business side to where you can move to the freaking Caribbean and have the freedom and the financial means to be able to do that and still crush it in business. So it's going to be a good episode, man. This is going to be cool.
Yeah, man. So kicking us off, Jordan, if you want to like tell us, here's what I always love about this is like we tell the listener, like, this is why you should listen to this guest. So give us some of your background, man, as far as in launching your own business and specifically what you do. And then we'll get into kind of the meat of our conversation today about like how to gamify your business operations and still keep an awesome business culture or culture for your team as you're scaling your business. But on the front end, man, tell us about Jordan and your entrepreneurial adventure.
Yeah. So, you know, going into college, I really had no intent or thought process around like becoming an entrepreneur, starting my own business. Actually, after college, my original game plan was actually to join the Navy, believe it or not. And I had an injury that I sustained in track in college, which sort of shut that door. And so my major in college was in finance. And so my first job out of college was actually as a financial analyst working in business development, mergers and acquisitions, things of that nature. Quickly realized that for me, that sounded way sexier than it actually was in terms of a day-to-day. I very quickly realized that I was just a spreadsheet monkey and was just staring at Excel for 14 hours a day. And and was like, okay, the breaking point for me was, and I loved everyone I worked with. It was a great experience. I learned so much. But the breaking point for me was where I was sitting around a table. We were putting together a deck for a pitch. And it was me and four of my colleagues who were all, you know, 10 to 20 years older than me. I was for sure the youngest person on that team. And like tensions were high. Hours had been, you know, pretty long leading up to this. And so we're sitting around this table and we're having like a heated argument over what size font we should use for the bullet points in the PowerPoint presentation. And I just had like this out of body experience where I zoomed out and looked down on myself. And I just said, this can't be my life moving forwards. And so that was kind of the breaking point for me where I realized like, okay, I need to make a shift. And so I did a lot of reflection and realized that the pieces and the parts of that role that I really enjoyed were specifically on like the go-to-market strategy and the more the marketing and the sales and the monetization side of things. And so I started looking through a confluence of events, was engaged at that time. So I was looking at potentially moving because my wife and I at that time were long distance. She was wrapping up her last year of college. And so started looking at a marketing agency because I just realized that that's kind of the skill set that I didn't have that was really interesting to me. And so ultimately got a job working as a digital marketing media buyer, a coordinator for Fortune 5000 e-commerce brands at a fairly large marketing agency, a national marketing agency. Learned a ton in that role, was managing, you know, marketing budgets of $500,000 to $1 million a month for footwear brands that you'd recognize. Learned a ton. Also very quickly realized that working in an agency was not for me long term. Owning an agency is great. Working in an agency, not so much. And so ultimately I received an offer to come aboard a startup at a company called Self-Publishing School to run their marketing team. Self-Publishing School is an online education company, helps folks write and publish books. Great company. I was sort of an early employee on that team, helped grow their marketing and helped grow that business from not a ton to significantly more than that. And then at that point, I was there about 4 years, realized like, okay, I kind of understand this and I really loved that startup business growth aspect. And so for me, I realized, okay, for me to kind of continue to grow and continue on my career trajectory, it's time for me to do my own thing. And so left SPS, started a marketing agency called Predictable Revenue Agency, where we worked, myself and my business partner, we worked specifically with higher ticket consulting online education businesses and helped them effectively double their revenue from paid advertising. And so did that for about a year. One of my clients, and feel free to tell me if I'm going too far in the weeds, but one of my clients at that time.
Perfect, man. This is, yeah, super intriguing.
Love it. So one of my clients at that time was a guy by the name of Taylor Conroy, who is extremely, just an incredibly, incredible person. He's done 4 TEDx talks. He's visited all of the continents. Like, he's freaking Superman. And so we were working with him, and he had a business at the time that was helping folks land TEDx talks. And so he's got a coaching program that helps entrepreneurs, professionals, experts, people with a message to share, helps them get on the TEDx stage and then specifically leverage that talk to go on and whether it's raise money for a nonprofit, whether it's to launch a business, build an audience. Like a TEDx talk is an incredibly influential asset that you can have if you are in the thought leadership space. And I'm extremely passionate about that. We can go into more on that later. And we were working together and things were going extremely well. And at this point, you know, I'd had 5+ years of pretty in-depth marketing experience in kind of the consulting industry. And I'd just never seen an offer that performed as well as this did when it comes to advertising. And it's a fantastic offer. And so we were working together, things were going really well. And this was also, you know, in the middle of COVID. And so TEDx events were in the middle of shifting from all in-person to virtual. And there's just a lot of flux, but things were still going well for us. And so it just kind of came about that Taylor and I started having conversations about just like where this thing could go. And And ultimately where we landed is that, hey, this thing can get much bigger as just a client, as a client agency relationship. I'm sort of capped at my ability to be involved in that. And so where we kind of landed then is we went through a bit of a pivot in that business. We rebranded as Thought Leader, and we started working together as equal partners in that business. And so Thought Leader as a business was started in October of 2020. And then since October of 2020, it is March 2022. Since then, we've kind of taken it from zero to a little over 5 million in revenue in that time. Worked with, you know, over 400 folks, helped them land TEDx talks in that time, and grew the team from a team of five to now we're at 22 full-time team members. So it's been a wild ride, and it's been a lot of fun.
Man, that's amazing. What a completely outside of the box, like different business than most anybody else that we've talked to or we've known that's developed something during the pandemic. It's really cool. And I love your story on how you didn't have your sights set on, I want to own my business and this is what I'm going to do and I'm going to grind every day. You followed the paths of just growth and how do I go into new opportunities? How do I take advantage of them? How do I perform at a high level as an employee? And let me just keep leveraging to learn more and gain knowledge and experience and relationship and connections. And that's ultimately by doing that, what's landed an awesome opportunity as a business owner and a partnership. That's cool, dude.
Yeah. So Jordan, a couple things as you're telling that story, I'm like just pointing out to our listeners, because we got a lot of listeners that are entrepreneurs, right? They're already owning their own business. And then there's a lot that are the like wannapreneurs. They're currently working in a business, but they're like, man, just like your story was like, okay, I think I want to pivot to something different. So you said something early on in regards to like, hey, you had your first job, you had the outer body experience, you recognize like I need to do something else. And what I love about this is you picked your next gig based on something that you wanted to learn. So it wasn't just about like, where's the money? It's like, well, no, I need to. So I got this skill on the financial end of things and from the analyst aspect, but I need to pick up some marketing knowledge because that's really where my heart is anyway. And so you found that opportunity. Robert Kiyosaki says, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. He's like, man, when you're on the front part of your career, don't worry about how much money you're earning. Just he's like, work to learn, not to earn. And so seeing you apply that knowledge is pretty cool. And then also seeing, again, like Chad said, how you go from like one stage to the next, and you've had these pivotal moments where you've made a decision, okay, I'm going to go this way now. So my question for you in that is, from a visionary leadership standpoint, and I wrote down as you said those things, I'm like, walk a mile, see a mile. When you went from whatever job it was to self-publishing school, I'm sure you had kind of like a, oh, this is where I'm going next. And I'm sure probably some of those things transitioned over time. Could you walk us through just real quick some of maybe how the target changed over time, but even again with predictable revenue, you pivoted, right? You said, okay, we're here. This isn't going to take me where I see that I can now go. Let's pivot toward Thought Leader. Walk us through some of the mindset there, because I think for the stronger business audience, a lot of what we do is it's not just the tactical knowledge for implementation. A lot of times it's like how to think about situations and how to creatively problem solve. So can you walk us through kind of what you've learned, honestly, the Thought Leader aspect? Like how were you able to manage the process for establishing the vision and then being willing to pivot towards something a little bit different?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think that the one thing that I've done a good job of, where I think initially it was almost by accident, and I've since become much more intentional about it, is really attempting to optimize for like, if I'm in doubt, because like anytime you make a business pivot or a career pivot, there's no right or wrong answer, right? You don't know how it's going to plan out. And so if in doubt, to really optimize for the thing that gives you the most optionality based on that decision. And so like, for example, when I was in finance, I realized that based on the skill set that I was learning, which it's incredibly important to understand how to analyze financial numbers and, you know, all of those things, that's also a very specialized skill set. And really the only way that you're able to, like the only track in that skill set, unless you're going to start your own fund or something of that nature, is really to stay within that corporate environment and move along the corporate development track. And so I knew that, you know, I was looking at my boss and my boss's boss, and I knew that I didn't want to be them. Not that they weren't amazing people that didn't have amazing lives. It just wasn't me. And so I said, okay, it seems like I need to develop a skill set that gives me more options, because I'm not really sure what I want to do yet at that point. And so for me, that was, okay, I need to learn marketing, because there's a lot of different ways that you can take that skill set and a lot of different ways that you can apply it. And so it was actually a hard decision for me. And I'm glad you pointed that out. Like, I took that role purely for the learning aspect. I actually took a 20% pay cut. Like, I was making decent money for my first job out of college. And I took a significant pay cut to then go and work in the marketing agency and learn those skills. And ultimately it paid off. And so, like, you know, at the agency, I realized, okay, I definitely love this skill set, do not like this environment. And so how can I find a way to apply that skill set somewhere else? Opportunity came about to go to run marketing at self-publishing school. And that was like a startup environment. So I knew that I would learn way more about just how to grow a business. And I did. It was one of the highest growth experiences of my life, I would say. And so, yeah, for me, it's just been a matter of, as much as I can, trying to optimize for what gives me the most options.
Man, that's, for our listener, I feel like that is one of the best pieces of advice we've ever heard on this podcast, of look at those decisions and those growth opportunities that give you the most options. Interestingly enough, for me personally, that's exactly how I look at real estate when I'm investing in different real estate properties. I have to have more than one option. I'm not looking for, okay, this is just one option of rental. I want a plan A, a plan B, and a plan C. Like, okay, I can Airbnb this, or I can take this, or it could be a long-term rental, or this could be something I converted to a single family house that a family lives in. Like, I love options when I make investments and having those different opportunities that provide that. And I've never thought about it from a business aspect of making decisions of pivoting careers or opportunities or partnerships. That's really cool.
I love these moments like this too, Jordan, where Chad, rightfully so, like, admonishes, like, hey man, that was the best advice we've probably ever gotten on the podcast. Let me tell you how I'm already doing that stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's just, he's an accountant, but he's just a brilliant marketer. And he's really good at making himself the hero of every story. I mean, kudos to you, man.
I feel like as the host of this show, I have to plug some like intentional, like credibility stories in there. So, you know, people keep coming back like, man, you know that Chad, he's one heck of a smart dude. Like, he's got all this. I mean, his guests are good,
sharp guy.
He's really had this figured out for years.
I just want to take that chance.
I don't think this guy ever struggles in business or ever has bad days or has things he has that fails and he has to shut down.
I wanted to make sure that our audience saw that.
I appreciate it.
It was so smooth. It was beautiful. Say, Jordan, that's the most amazing thing you've ever said, man. I'm glad I told you that before the show started.
I thought about just recording my own episode without you or without any guests. So yeah, this kind of highlights, maybe I should do that a little more.
Oh man, that is awesome. I mean, your journey too, Jordan, is you're saying these things. One of the things I'm seeing, and even like we're obviously, we could see you talking. Our audience is not going to get that luxury, but you didn't let your ego get in the way of these moves. I mean, most people wouldn't be willing to take a 20% decrease because it's because their ego wouldn't let on. It was like, oh, okay, now I got to like decrease my lifestyle for a second to take this move. But you had a long-term mentality of like, well, now I want to learn this and I see where I want to go. This gets me more in that direction. It creates the options for me. So you had a bigger picture that you were willing to make that sacrifice for. So I love seeing that too. Chad, this is probably a time for Chad to point out when he's done that in the past. You good?
I just want to talk over you and ask a question about that. Actually, that's all I want to do. So on that, on what Josh so eloquently said there, and thank you, co-host, for bringing this up. What did somebody teach you that? Is that something you just figured out? Like
for the love of God, don't say you taught it to him.
Not a whole lot of people were like, okay, I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to go for education and learning. I'm willing to take a pay cut. I'm willing to pivot from this really sexy job on paper and a dream situation for a new grad. Like, how did you gain that mindset to make that decision in that moment at that age?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Probably one of the best questions you've ever asked on this podcast. And I think the answer.
Y'all can keep with these sort of yeah. testimonials and these highlights of how good of a host I am.
That's the best question a host of a podcast has ever asked. It was amazing.
No, but I think the answer probably comes down to to upbringing, right? I had great parents for sure. And I'm from the Midwest, and we all have a solid amount of self-deprecation, and no one from the Midwest really takes themselves that seriously. And so I think it's probably a combination of those two things, but primarily upbringing. It's very much like, you know, you're not entitled to anything, work for what you get. And if you want something, like, put in the work and make it happen. And so, yeah, I don't know if I have a great answer, but that'd be my best guess.
That makes sense. I feel like he just told me I'm from the South and I'm obnoxious and I'm a know-it-all.
He's like, in the Midwest.
You're from the Midwest. You'd be way more humble, dude.
He said, it's not your fault, Chad. You were just born in the wrong part of the country, man.
You know, it happens.
Oh, I love it, man.
So, Jordan, going from there to go back to the thought leader. So you made this transition from one company. So you said you rebranded, basically just pivoted the company. So not necessarily like a complete new startup, but like, hey, we got to transition this thing and do it differently. And the timing of it too, I think this is awesome, because this is a time period where a lot of people are very hesitant to make big decisions because of the pandemic. And like, you just don't know what the future holds. There's this kind of like, what are we supposed to do? And you did something big. You're like, nah, let's do it. Let's make this thing happen. And you've been able to build a really strong business in that process of doing it too. So let's talk about that for a second. How are you able to pivot your business and then to attract the team and move forward with, it sounds like, with courage and hope and like, hey, guys, we got a vision to go here and build a great culture around it, because to accumulate, you know, 22 full-time team members. And again, this is mostly working in like a remote virtual environment, right?
Yeah, we're all fully remote, mostly North America based. We've got a handful of folks in Canada, most people in the US, but we're all fully remote.
So talk to us about launching that business and then going again, you know, into some of the specific things we mentioned on the start, how you develop such a strong business, the gamifying aspect of it, you know, measuring KPIs, how you set goals for your remote team and really have built a phenomenal team, a phenomenal company with phenomenal culture.
Yeah. So I think, you know, when people think about fully remote teams, and it's less of a shock now. I think pre-COVID, the concept of a fully remote team, most people had just never even fathomed that that's a thing. Now it's a little bit more common, but I think a lot of people have this perception that like, oh, a fully remote team, there's no way you're able to have, you know, high levels of productivity. There's no way you're able to really manage your team. And it just, there's no way to really build like a thriving, fast growth business if everyone's fully remote and no one's in the same office. And I think for us, and really what we've done is basically, there's a book by Vern Harnish called Scaling Up, also very similar to the book called Traction by, I think, Gino Wickman. We basically just use that as our entire playbook to run the business. And so for us, you know, if you have an office, you're able to create structure and communication cadences and like put communication structures in place. And a lot of that just happens just through synchronicity of people being in the same office, folks getting up for a cup of coffee, walking around like, oh, by the way, how's that project update coming? Like a lot of those conversations just happen organically. You can't simulate that same effect in a remote working environment. And so I think the thing that we've been very intentional about is creating extremely intentional communication structures, like scheduled meetings for different teams to replicate that same level of structure and just communication in a remote environment. And so case in point, we have, you know, at the beginning of every week, we've got our longer strategic meetings with individual teams. We've got a 15-minute daily huddle with everyone on the team every single day of the week. Every single team member has KPIs that they report on, and we can get into the weeds of the KPIs in just a minute, but we've created a ton of structure, which from the outside looking in probably looks overwhelming to the point of like, there is so much reporting and just structure in place. It probably would feel to an outsider as if like, yo, you guys are just a bunch of robots and no one's thinking creatively and nothing gets done. But what actually happens in a remote environment is that structure kind of gives people the confines. It kind of creates the rules of the game. And then people are able to very much in an extremely autonomous manner, do whatever they want within that structure. And so I think the mistake that a lot of people make with fully remote teams is they are afraid of creating that structure because it is very different than an in-person environment. And as a result of not creating that structure, things can go off tracks because the communication is just not the same. And so I think that's one of the things that we've done a very good job of is creating that structure and sort of forcing that communication, which allows people to be in line, allows people to see the vision, to understand what's happening, and to be rowing in the same direction.
So you've had a really impressive journey leading up to Thought Leader. But in that entire journey, I didn't hear anything about managing people or managing 22 people or managing people remote or in person. So I'm guessing coming into Thought Leader, you had zero experience on a management level of managing teams or employees. Is that right?
Somewhat. So I did build out a small team at self-publishing school, a small marketing team. But very much it was a trial by fire. And self-publishing school was also a fully remote company. And so I would credit a lot of what I learned through building that team, because my time there, I was obviously not the leader of that company. I was at the time, I think there, we had a team of four or five people, myself included. And by the time I left, we were at, I think, close to 30 full-time team members. So I'd sort of seen that growth and just what the different choke points are as your headcount grows and how to solve for some of those things. And so while I didn't have direct experience for sure, and there's been a lot of errors and a lot of lessons learned, I had at least seen that growth. So I wasn't completely starting from scratch and making it up as I went.
Okay. So you had a little bit of insight there from watching it happen and being involved in your role. Now, with that, going into Thought Leader and this thing scaling up, did you just fully commit to the book scaling up and say, you know what? I know this is an area I don't have a ton of experience, so whatever the book says, that's what we're going to follow? Or like, how did you approach that from a learning aspect of what do we do and how much are we committing to what we're reading right now?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think the short answer is yes, right? So if in doubt, we committed to the book. Now, since then, like as we implement things, we realize, okay, this thing probably needs to be tweaked. This thing is overly complex. It's clear they just made it overly complex so that they could brand it their own thing. Like there's things that we can tweak and change, but very much that book I would credit for 85% of the structure that we have in place. And ultimately we just, two business partners and myself made the decision like, okay, if in doubt, we're just going to follow this book and we can always adjust after the facts, but if in doubt, we're just going to do what this book says.
Man, I love that. So is, you mentioned the other book, Traction. That's the book that we've taken and implemented. It's the same type of scenario, though. So, all right, we're EOS, but I use Google Chrome as my web browser. I'm not sure if that's a good thing or bad thing. But what I like about it is that you can enable the extensions that will like alter your user experience. And so when you said that about basically saying, hey, they made this thing overly complex because they needed to, because they're probably tweaking someone else's system, they can brand the content. We're scrap that. We'll do it our way here. I see it as one of those like Chrome extensions. And that's the same thing we've done with Traction. It's like, hey, we're implemented. We do the thing. We follow the process, but we're not afraid to be like, you know what? We feel like for us, it'd be, if we do it a little different here, it works better for us and roll with it. And it's been awesome having that, again, kind of, I don't want to call it plan B, but I guess operating system, the way I would say it is good. Like you fall back on something, predictability. Like if we're not changing it, well, this is the rules of engagement are here written in this book. So I love that. I think I got a question for you in regards to scaling your company and the complexity of your structure. So you said, hey, if you're looking from the outside, it looks pretty rigid. But the reality is that when people get in, they know what the playing field looks like. And so then they can bring their skill level, their art to the game. When you're onboarding people, when you're attracting people to your company, when you're getting them set up, are you looking for a very specific type of person to bring onto your team that you feel like, oh, this person would work well within the structure and environment we have? Or do you look for multiple different, you know, personalities? And if you, I don't know if you get into all the Enneagram and all that type of stuff, strengths finders, are you really like trying to focus on finding the right person and stuff like that, that can operate within that structure and environment? Or are you kind of like taking people and saying, this is the rules of the game. Let's see if they can work out.
Yeah. Yep. Great question. So for sure, we look very closely at culture, past experience, and past like autonomous working experience, because remote work is not for everyone. Like, and honestly, there's many days where I wish I had an office that I could go into. And so I think there's kind of two approaches you can take in terms of hiring. And I don't think either one is necessarily correct, but there's the hire extremely fast and then just fire extremely fast. And effectively the first 90 days on the job are kind of the interview. Or there's the do a lot of upfront work in terms of vetting. And then hopefully like you're going to have a higher probability of success rate in that role. And for us, we choose the latter. And so we have a, frankly, a very intensive hiring process for every role on the team. So we have multiple personality assessments. We have multiple rounds of interview with multiple team members. We typically have at least one homework assignment. We typically do a paid project so we can see what it's actually like to work with those folks. And then we finally bring them on board. And then we have a pretty intensive onboarding process that typically takes anywhere from 2 to 3 weeks with, you know, anywhere from 15 to 25 hours of content that they need to go through just to get up to speed on what's going so they can understand our culture, understand our language, understand what's going on and what the expectations are. And so I think that we do a lot of work on the front end. The thing that we look for more than anything else is culture fit. Culture fit and really ability to take ownership and to figure things out. Because most things can be learned, right? But it's very difficult to teach someone the ability to teach themselves how to accomplish something. I think it's stunning how far you can get with a quick Google search. And a lot of people are afraid to use Google. And so like, we're really looking for someone who's a good culture fit that we think we can mold into whatever the role requires more than someone who has years of experience, but maybe a little bit more set in their ways.
How do you guys predict that quality of, hey, I think this person is someone who takes ownership? Do y'all have a tool for measuring that? Or you have a kind of a, hey, we're going to see if they'll jump through this set of hoops. And therefore we can make a prediction on if we think this is a take ownership kind of person.
Yeah. The latter primarily. And so it's a combination of a few things. So one, our interview process is intentionally designed to be pretty frustrating. And so someone with an ego, someone who's like a very senior, been in like a corporate environment, is just not even going to make it through that interview process. Cause they're like, man, this is not worth my time.
Walk us through that. Just what does that look like from the standpoint? Not necessarily the whole interview process, but when you're saying, hey, we kind of intentionally make it difficult. Can you give us an example of what that means?
Yeah. So it depends on the role, right? But ultimately, you know, before like the very first step of the interview, so like before they even know they're getting an interview, they're required to submit a personality assessment that takes, you know, 20 to 30 minutes to complete. So that weeds out a lot of folks, and the number of emails that I get or the number of form submissions I get that leave that spot blank or say, I'm not going to take a personality assessment before I know if I'm getting an interview, mind blowing, right? And I'm sure we lose some good candidates there, but that's just part of the process. So that's stage one. Also, you know, there's typically a stage where we intentionally take a long time to get back to them. And then we hit them with like an in-depth homework assignment with a relatively short due date on that. We also typically, depending on who, what the role is, we'll also have a period. We will push back and like give them some hard feedback on their homework assignment and just see how they respond to that. The best team members take that feedback and like immediately implement it in some way. The worst, they'll disagree with you and like try and justify why it happened and how it happened. And so just different things to test how people react in different situations.
So this hiring process for the employee side sounds like it sucks. Man, it sounds like frustrating. And for me, I'm like, yeah, I would definitely not get hired. I'd be like, screw these guys, which is shocking to me because the last 2 years have been the hardest time in the history of business for us and our generation for hiring. And y'all been able to hire or keep or maintain 22 people, which means you had to hire more than that. What are y'all offering or dangling for these people to want to come work with you when they could go out and get a job tomorrow, like without any of those frustrations or hoops to jump through?
Totally. I mean, I think that the thing that we're really optimizing for it and who we appeal to are the competitive folks who want to be on a winning team and like a high growth, high performance team of A players, frankly. And that's a vibe and that's an environment that you don't get at a lot of places. And so there's that, but then there's also like we compensate very well. We're fully remote. There is a ton of autonomy. Like, micromanagement does not exist. You are going to like give it, you're going to be given a target, and it's on you to find it. And like, for sure, the leadership team and everyone is there to support, but it's very much assumed that you're just going to, you're going to do your thing. If you're hired, we assume that you are very, very good at your job, and we're going to treat you in that way. And so there's a ton of autonomy. There's a ton of room for growth. We're a fast growth organization. There's a ton of flexibility and cross promotion and just learning different areas of the business. And so we're definitely not an environment for everyone, but for the right person, it's an environment that really can't be replicated any other way.
I mean, that's so good that you, number one, you just defined, like, this is who we're looking for. We're looking for somebody that's a winner. They want freedom. They want autonomy. Therefore, if they want freedom and autonomy, they'll take the responsibility to learn on their own. Their ego won't be so big that they can't humble themselves to ask for questions or, again, like, I will figure this out. Or, oh, you give me some feedback. All right, let me take it and implement it and send it back to you. Like, you guys know what you're looking for. You know what it takes to win in your environment. It's interesting because one of the business that Chad and I own together, like, we have done a really good job of hiring some folks, and they've crushed it in their jobs. But we've also let some people in that haven't. And we're like, oh, man, like, we thought they were going to take ownership, you know, not that the ego get in the way, and they stumbled on it. And you're trying to figure out, all right, how do we find that out on the front end better? And it's just, you know, I think that your methodology there is really good, which is why I asked that question. I'm like, all right, what are the hoops you're having them jump through? So I love the fact that you're saying, look, we're going to give a little bit of a gap here of when we got back with them, then we're going to get back with them in a short time frame and check their ego. See if they got an ego or if they're like, no, I want to be on this team, so I'm willing to do the homework that they're giving me. Those are awesome things, man. So talk to us a little bit about what the gamifying aspect of what you guys do with your business operations.
Hold on a second. Before we switch gears to go gamifying, I want to talk about that too, but I got to dive in this a little more.
He's already got a game for your onboard, or for your, that's what I'm saying there. It's like, you got some game there, man. That's good.
You ask all my crowd that works downstairs right now, there's no gamifying in the business we're doing. They're showing up getting kicked in the teeth every day.
That's the game, man. You got to wear a mouth
it's
guard.
Like MMA for accountants downstairs right now. I want to talk about gamifying business, but before we go there, I want to learn a little more about this, like, A players, high performing, take ownership. Obviously, there's some people that interview or go through that process really well, and when they get onboarded, they're just not performing at a high level. And you guys, I mean, y'all have grown a business from $0 to $5 million in revenue in no time. So you need the people because the business is, I'm sure, outgrowing the personnel. What happens when your business is growing so fast? You bring on somebody that's not an A player, but they are helping because the business is just choking everybody with growth. Like, do you keep them? Do you get rid of them? Do you mentor them? Do you hire a consultant to deal with them? What do you do in that situation?
That's a great question.
Thank you.
So I will allow it.
I will keep those coming.
Yeah, that is a good question. And the answer is, you know, that's something that we're still figuring out every month as those challenges come about. But it actually ties in fairly well to the gamification question. Thanks. See what I did there? Jordan. Nice, perfect segue.
I kind of figured that. Thank you.
Chance, I knew I would set up a perfect opportunity.
Y'all, I've been hosting for like 90 episodes now. And I mean, to say I'm dialed in is a little bit of an understatement. So yeah, please continue. I've led you to order, Jordan. You can drink now.
He's like, hey, all man, right, the podcast right. is completely gamified. So I mean, I get this stuff, but you want to tell our audience, that'd be great.
You want to explain that to everyone else who doesn't understand. No. So, I mean, for us, like, you know, in alignment with that autonomy comes clear expectations. And so this is, I mean, EOS is actually very similar to scaling up. One of them for sure copied the other. I don't know which is which. I actually like the EOS system. It's a little bit simpler, but every single role has a job scorecard. Every single role has targets. Every single role has KPIs that they report on. And so there's really never any ambiguity as to like whether someone is winning the day, winning the week, winning the month. There's no ambiguity there, which I think is mistake number one that just naturally occurs as a business grows, is your team starts to, especially as they get further and further removed from like the front lines, if you will, they start to not know if they're actually winning or losing. Like they don't know where their performance is stacking up. That's one of the things that we do a very good job of is that's very clear. Right. And so that's number one, is just setting clear North Stars, clear milestones, clear metrics. and giving all of our team members the authority to say, like, hey, you know what, this thing, this project that you're asking me to take on, it's not impacting any of my numbers. And so either we need to change my numbers to reflect that, or I can't say yes to this project. And as a leadership team, we're like, damn, didn't even think about that. That's a great point. Yep. Okay, cool. We need to shift some things, or we need to reprioritize. So I think that's number one. Number two, you know, and this is something that I say frequently, like at a business that is growing at the rate that we are, you know, if you assume that we're growing, call it 20% a quarter at this point, that means that just to remain qualified for your role, you also need to be growing at 20% a quarter.
Ooh,
right? Just to remain qualified. And that's, I mean, that's aggressive, right? And so the answer to your question is, in some cases, we've had to bring in other people who can then come in and actually fill that role and help to train in the individual who may have been in that role. And it's just the growth of the company has outpaced the growth of that individual, which is fine. That's fine. We can train them up. We can coach them up. And then, you know, there's difficult conversations as well. Like there's been instances where we've had to let folks go. There's been instances where we've just needed to invest more into training and coaching them up. I think it's kind of a case by case basis. And it's something that I personally am getting better at addressing, you know, as these situations arise. I certainly don't have a perfect answer for how to handle that.
Man, that's good. I love that the business is growing at this percentage. Just to maintain, you need to be growing at this percentage. You can't let the business outpace you from a growth standpoint. That's big there. That helps me a lot in understanding the concept of how to communicate that to some team members that do seem to fall behind or don't seem to be able to grow or perform at as an A player as the business continues to get better. They were an A player 3 years ago, but now the business has outgrown them. And so I love it.
I think that's a great point. And honestly, Jordan, I don't know if I've ever heard an entrepreneur or a leader or manager say that. Like, no, we create from the level of expectation that, hey, the numbers that you're hitting today won't be good enough for a year down the road. And like, this isn't a status quo organization. Like, we're leveling up. And the only way for us to level up as an entity or organization is for our team to continually get better and level up. So I love that, because we hear oftentimes about an organization outgrowing like a person, like, hey, we got a CFO and they can't handle it anymore. But I don't think I've heard somebody say, hey, the expectation is that if you want to stay in that CFO spot, or if you want to stay in that, you're the sales manager spot, like you got to level up, you got to grow.
Everybody, the entire team.
Yeah, that's awesome. No, man.
Nobody's going to be at the same position or knowledge level right now as they should be in 2 years.
I'm extremely surprised that Chad didn't already know that.
Well, you know, I was thinking it. I've been thinking that for a while. I just haven't like had the opportunity to like say it, but I like to provide the platform for Jordan to communicate that with us. And, you know, it's a novel idea.
You're a giver, man. You should be a college professor for sure. So I love that. So, and it sounds like, so even the gamifying aspect, because I mean, that's really what that is, right? You're saying like, hey, we got a game in place. People know that in order for us to get to the next level, like they got to be able to get to the next level. And you have specific, again, idea of this is what the next level would look like. So you're creating clear expectations, clear milestones. I'm terrible at this. One of my guys, he's like, hey man, you just got to give better metrics for success sometimes. And I'm like, I just figured it out. You know, so why can't y'all just figure it out? That's not the way it works. And Chad's tried to tell me that, you know, cause he knows, but, I hadn't gotten it yet. His focus has been more so on educating our podcast guest. He's not taking the time to mentor me properly the way that he should. So talk about setting goals though, man. What does the goal setting process for your leadership team look like, and you and your partners? And then how do you roll that out to your team and also help them create their metrics? Is that something y'all are just saying, hey, your numbers, Chad, your number is now this, or are you getting your buy-in from your team on setting what their metrics need to be or what their number needs to be in that type of EOS system?
Yeah, it's another great question. And this is something that's had to evolve as our team size has grown. And so we do, similar to EOS, we do quarterly, we call them offsites, right? And so we do two quarterly offsites in person where we'll go somewhere fun. Like our first one was in Costa Rica. We did one in Scottsdale. We've got another one coming up. Not sure where we'll go for that. But we do two in person.
I don't need our team to like earmuffs right now, Kate. Yeah. We do ours like two doors down and escape the space. Like we just walk over like,
hey guys, going on a team walk today. It's going to be awesome. team building exercise.
Costa Rica. I don't even take my wife to Costa Rica.
He's saving that money. He doesn't have a business or a building. It's, you know?
Exactly. We're able to justify it because we don't have rent.
Good point. Yeah. All right.
Ooh, I can't believe you didn't think of that.
Yeah. Good. All right. You may continue now. I give you permission.
Thank you, Chad. And so we do two in person and then we do two virtually. And so when we were a small team, like less than 10 individuals, like obviously the three partners in the business, we would have a pretty good idea of where we wanted to go, but it was much more of an open dialogue where everyone's able to contribute. And it's easier at that team size. And I think Traction talks about this as well, as like less than 8 employees, give or take, everyone is pretty much on the same page because everyone is talking to one another. But once you kind of get 10 team members plus, especially in a remote environment, communication just starts to break down because like for every individual you add, it like increases the complexity of communications like 8x or something like that. It's not just like you're adding one more person. It massively increases the complexity in communications. And so that's where in a remote environment, especially, you've really got to be intentional about making sure that you're creating those structures so that communication is being passed down clearly, because otherwise stuff just falls through the cracks. And so as we've started to shift that and we've grown our team and we've built out like a true leadership team, not just the three partners, but like a leadership team and then, you know, the full team, what we've shifted that to is typically a 2-day leadership offsite, either virtual or, you know, virtual offsite or in person, where we'll really set the goals for the next 90 days. We work in 90-day one-quarter sprint, similar to EOS. And then those goals are typically set to, you know, within 90% of where we expect them to be. And then we'll have a full team. If it's a virtual, it'll just be a 1-day full team, all hands sort of presentation where we'll communicate those goals. We'll get input from the rest of the team. Sometimes there's gaps that we might've missed. So we'll update the goals if need be, but we'll kind of communicate those goals. And then it's on the individual teams and their team leads to set the specific team rocks that cascade down from the full team goals. And so we sort of learned this the hard way where we really tried to keep that full team inclusiveness in the goal setting. That same process that we used at like, you know, 5 to 10 employees, it just completely broke down. We had 15 and 20 people on a call or in the same room. There's just no way to really create any sort of cohesive, okay, this is the goal, this is what we're setting with that much different input. And so we've had to shift that process a bit to where it's okay, leadership team is setting the goals, communicating the high level full team goals to the individual, you know, sales, marketing, fulfillment, product dev teams. And then they have the autonomy to set their specific goals to cascade up into that.
So you would give them a big picture goal. Hey, sales team, we got to hit this particular metric over the course of 90 days or 6 months or whatever it is. You guys can figure out how to hit it. Is that kind of what you're saying? Or are you guys giving more of the specific than that? Like, is it like, no, these are our goals and y'all figure out how to implement it? Or is it giving some autonomy too in regards to their ability to define the goals within like a 90-day window?
It depends on the goal. So okay. Some goals we say, hey, we know we need to be at this target, right? Maybe it's this number of enrollments. Maybe it's this new product launch. And depending on how certain or how confident we are in the way to go about hitting that, we might have a breakout session at the offsite where we're jamming with that team on like actually defining what that project looks like. Or it could be, hey, we know that this is a goal that we have. We don't really know how we're going to hit it. We're like the first thing that we're going to do over the first 2 weeks is we're going to define and like set how to do that. So it kind of depends on the goal.
That's good too, because I think one of the challenges with goal setting in from a top-down standpoint, especially, is getting buy-in from the lower levels. You know, as you said, as the company grows from 8 to 20 to 50, the ability to get buy-in at 8 is a little different. Everybody can be in the same room, but being able to for vision to continue to go down and for people to get buy into that vision as you're going through multiple layers of leadership, multiple layers of management, it can get a little more tricky as far as in saying like, all right, Chad, I need your team to do X, Y, Z. If I have to, utilize and leverage and be okay with like Chad's leadership skills have to be able to be implemented with this team to get the buy-in from whatever those metrics would be. So I think for one of the challenges for all growing companies is figuring that piece out is like, hey, as you get bigger, You got to figure out how to get your people to buy in at the lowest levels and really be plugged into what the vision is, and figuring out when to let them be part of the creation aspect of how to reach the goal. And then also to be like, know when you got a strategy you believe that's going to be effective and you're just challenging your team to implement it effectively.
Yeah. And you know, that's something really shifted when we kind of started things. We took the goal setting approach of, you know, what is it? Shoot for the moon. And even if you miss, you end up in the stars. So it's like very, very aggressive goals that realistically we were never going to hit, but we still did very well. What we quickly realized is that that becomes demoralizing, especially as like the rest of your team is not having those kind of daily conversations with you. And so they don't understand your frame of reference. And so what we realized is that setting those ultra aggressive goals was just, it was not being productive. And so we've since really shifted to setting targets, like specifically in our pro forma, and when it comes to like numbers and just lagging indicators, setting targets that we believe with a high degree of certainty that we can hit. And so shooting for accuracy of hitting goals, not necessarily setting huge stretch goals and trying to knock it out of the park. And that's really helped with full team buy-in, is like, okay, if we are setting this goal, that's saying that we all agree to at least 80% that we can hit this goal. We're all making that commitment to hit this goal. Now let's go make it happen. And that's been a huge shift for us.
So you go back to your financial analyst days and then what you're growing and building now and how that merges together. Obviously you're a numbers guy. You understand the dynamic of business financials. Are you overspending on staffing to get where you need to be? Having 22 people, you can have departments or you can have teams, but in the beginning, unless you were spending way more than it justified based on revenue, you, I assume, weren't able to have teams or departments or all of this different layers. How did you approach that from a growth standpoint?
Yeah. So again, a lot of trial and error. I know we have done a good job of not over hiring, overspending on headcount to achieve growth. We've actually done a pretty good job of keeping that, you know, labor efficiency ratio kind of roughly where we want it to be. I'd be lying if I said we were managing to an LER number, because we're not, but like that's the goal, right? And so ultimately what that growth looked like is, and frankly, this is an advantage that we had with, you know, three partners in the business, is I'm CEO and ran marketing. One of our partners ran sales and one of our partners ran client experience, product fulfillment. And so it was actually somewhat easier for us, I think, to manage that transition, because we'd have, you know, maybe one or two people on each of those businesses. And for a while I was a one-man marketing team. And so the three of us were able to kind of act as those department heads and kind of make sure that the business was moving in the direction that we wanted it to. And then as we added headcount, that was when, okay, this A player is, you know, going to be promoted to run this team. And we were able to sort of organically build out those teams over a period of 9 months.
Okay. That makes sense. And as owners serving heads of those departments, did you completely stay in your lane? Like, man, I'm going to run the marketing department and I'm not going to even look at or question what my partner's doing over here in his department.
I think we did a very good job of staying in our lanes. Yes. A lot of folks, you know, especially the first 6 to 12 months of the business, asked, like, when you hear about three equal partners in a business, you don't typically assume that things are going to go super smoothly at all times.
Yes.
And I think one of the things that we did an amazing job of was staying in our lanes. And so again, it comes back to that accountability. Everyone has the KPIs that they're reporting on. And so ultimately, as long as everyone is hitting their KPIs that we've agreed to, then there's no real reason to need to step in and meddle or, you know, interfere in any ways. And so we were able to stay in our lanes while also keeping that transparency throughout both ourselves as an owner team, as well as, you know, the full team. Like, okay, sales is hitting their numbers, marketing's hitting their numbers, client experience is hitting their numbers. Like, we can keep going. There's no need to step on toes.
I mean, that's a really good point too, Jordan. I know for Chad and I, like, we've been business partners for, I guess, 10 years. About 10 years now. And for a while, like, we were, I would say, like, if, you know, there's 100% lane here, like, Chad had a 10% segment and I had a 10% segment. And then we were like riding in the same lane for like 80%. And at one point in time, what we kept, we were, well, hey, what do you think we should do here? And I remember having a conversation where I was like, look, man, why don't, if you think we should do it, it's over here, just make the decision. Like, tell me this is what we're doing and I'll back it up. And same over here. And for us, it was huge because we were just riding the same lane so much, like not trying to step on each other's toes. We weren't. We just were like trying to be considerate of each other's opinions. And then we realized we're like, man, we're slowing ourselves down so much because we're sharing so many opinions where I would be fine with whatever he was going to choose and he'd be fine with what I was going to choose. And so we kind of, you know, redrew the lanes. And so now I have 90% and he's still in the same 10%. And it's worked extremely well.
I'm in the 10% lane and I get 50% of the money from a financial analysis standpoint, Jordan. I mean,
it's called return on effort, right?
Well, and 50% of the money, Jordan, is like way more with me in 90% control and Chad in 10% control. So we figured out what worked for us. And it's just been a great thing because the 10% area he's got, I'm like, I need that 10% taken care of. It's a big deal. It's important. It's 80-20 rule kind of stuff, right? It's 10%. Right. His 10% is in the 80-20 aspect. So it's good. It works for us. It's a really unique, weird partnership. And you can feel tension coming out.
It is fantastic.
This podcast is our creative outlet to not kill each other. It's been
we got it so efficient. I just get a direct deposit. I don't even have to show up for my check anymore.
It doesn't.
I ain't been to the building in like,
do you even know where
I didn't even know you've been there in 2022.
Chad thinks that we have a virtual work environment. He doesn't even know we have an office space. He's like, labor efficiency, what? oh, man. No. All right. So I do have another question for you. And again, as it goes in, I think this kind of wraps it up because the one thing we haven't talked about in regards to culture and growth and goals is rewards. So is how do you guys choose to reward your team for, you know, hitting the goals that you have set? If y'all have certain metrics and then you say it to Chad, like, hey, here's what your metric is. And I expect that as the company grows and we get better, then you get better at hitting your numbers and your number grows a little bit. How do you, what's your reward system? Because, you know, people do the gamification aspect. My kids play video games. Why? Because they, you know, they collect new Pokemons or they get coins or whatever it may be. That's the reason that they're playing. They want to get that stuff. So what is the setup for you guys with Thought Leader to get your team to keep moving forward?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of things. And for sure, there's the external rewards factor, which we do a good job of, and I'll get into that. But I think that if you're relying too much on those external rewards, you're actually almost in some ways disincentivizing like high growth and high performance. And so for us, it's very much just a, like, I don't know if you guys played sports, but you guys both seem like competitive guys. It's the culture and the vibe of being on a winning team, right? It's fun to be on a winning team because you win. And so that's really embedded all throughout our culture. And we celebrate wins, right? When someone hits a number, like, we're stoked about it. And so that's part of the culture, right? People enjoy winning and improving for the sake of winning and improving. Now, that being said, we also have a lot of fun. And so scaling up, maybe it's actually traction, but every quarter we set a theme, which is sort of, okay, here's kind of the overall theme for the quarter. Maybe it's, you know, client success or something. We'll come up with a catchphrase and then a number that's tied to that. Maybe it's getting 50 client testimonials for that quarter. And then if we hit that number, then everyone on the team gets a reward. And so we've done office upgrades. We've done, I think this quarter, we're doing like a $200 personal care spa day for everyone on the team. We just hit a reward, so everyone will get that. And so there's fun rewards like that. Our in-person offsites are a ton of fun. We make sure to carve out at least a full day for doing just like really fun activities. And we do splurge a bit on going to cool places and staying in really cool Airbnbs because we can get away with it because we don't have a lot of the overhead that traditional businesses do. And so there's that piece. And then we also have a profit share. And so every quarter we've got a company profit share where a percentage of profit is allocated to team members that have been with us for a period of time. And so with those key pieces, as well as, you know, everyone in the business has full transparency into all of the financials except individual team member compensation. And so like everyone is very clearly able to see, okay, got it. This is how I have impacted the business. Business is, you know, doing great, or maybe we're behind pace on numbers. Here is how I specifically, in my role as an account manager, in my role as a sales rep, can impact those numbers. And I can see how my contributions are helping the business grow. And so I think it's a combination of all those things.
Man, that's awesome. I love how you've got multiple different like kind of facets of rewards. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to do fun events. We're going to do like, it's not always monetary value that you're always giving out as a reward. It's like a lot of different things, because again, keeps it from being boring. If everybody's just always like, oh, we get a $200 bonus. It's like, no, you should be like, we may have an awesome event that we get to go to. We may do something fun together. I just think that that's a really good way of keeping it from being boring, keeping it exciting in your culture and making people, again, feel like they're winning in different ways. And so that's awesome, man. So kind of as we're like winding down the episode,
Landing the plane.
We do this every time, Jordan. And by the way,
he means he. Josh, like, I guess, like secretly as a kid, grew up wanting to be a pilot or something. I don't know. Because for 90 episodes now, we've been, all right, it's time to land the plane.
If it were Chad doing it, he'd probably be like, all right, it's time for the end of the session audit. You know, so it's probably better that it's me landing the plane with our max out moment, because this is stronger business, man. Max out moment. So we asked this question, Jordan, to all of our guests is, if you could only said one thing today, if they could only hear one thing from Jordan, what would it be that would make the biggest difference in their lives or in their companies?
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of going back to what we talked about at the beginning, it's like typically, particularly in business, there's rarely like a right or wrong answer, right? Both answers are probably kind of right and also kind of wrong. And so if you're in doubt, if you, you know, focus on the decision that gives you the most options, that provides the most optionality, that's almost never going to be the wrong decision. And so just really focusing on making a decision that gives you the most options and then just continuing to make the best next decision you can, you're going to end up in a good place.
Dude, I love it.
It's awesome, man. I've learned. I seriously have like 5 pages of notes. This has been extremely educational. And a lot of it's just me kind of regurgitating what I've already known and what I've been thinking as well. So, you know, I appreciate you coming in and help share that to our audience.
The funny thing, Jordan, is that he's got 5 pages of notes, but he's like, hey, these were already things that I had written down before the episode started, though. But I'm going to look back on
it. I was just checking. It's like I wasn't writing those. I was checking when Jordan would like speak of a note I've already written.
Jordan, so
you. Thanks, guys. This was fun.
Yeah, man. You guys, you help people. I mean, what you guys do is help people get exposure for their brands, right? So I know that you've had help people get TED Talks and these types of things. You got a special offer, a promo to share with our listeners. What was that special promo?
Yeah, so we've got a really, really great blog with just a ton of great content on this topic. You can go to thought-leader.com and get it. And then we also have my business partner, Taylor Conroy, as a webinar training where he walks through, you know, the exact step-by-step process you can go through to actually land a TEDx talk if it's something you're thinking about. And that's at thought-leader.com/training.
Who doesn't want to be on a TED Talk? I mean, seriously. I'm like, I'm going there next.
Yeah. Boom. I know a guy.
Chad, I got a link I'll send you right after the episode.
I like it. Well, man, this is seriously, man, it's been awesome. It's been educational. It's been amazing for our audience. A lot of fun. And so we'll have to do this again sometime.
This is great. Thanks for having me, guys. This was a lot of fun.
If you enjoyed this episode of the Stronger Business Podcast, then leave us a review and share it with a friend. You can find us online at strongerbusiness.com or check us out on Instagram or Facebook at Stronger Business. We look forward to hearing from you and have a great 2022.
Is that a remarkable that you guys both have?
So there's been like, I mean, probably 25 of these things been bought from people I talk to or I know. A client I had yesterday, he bought one because he met with me last year and saw it. And he's like, well, you know, if you go down on like your account page, there's like a referral link, you get $50 everyone that's like referred.
No.
I'm like, what? Yes. So you can refer.
I need to find that ASAP.
He said you got to dig around for it. But he's like, yeah, it's there. He's like, you haven't been doing that? I was like, no.